Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. Lynn and I are doing another highlights episode today, which we're excited to get into and cover some of the content from the previous five episodes that we've released. Before we get into all of that, as a quick reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes. And please, if you enjoy the content, remember to share, to subscribe to our YouTube channel, give us a rating on your podcast app that you use. This all helps us greatly. We're still getting off the ground. We're a relatively new podcast, and all of that feedback is much appreciated. That being said, Lynn.
Yeah, and I'd also say please give us a follow on X. We always post our new content on X, and we love feedback, and our DMs are always open, so that's a good way to find us as well.
Yeah, good point. Feel free to reach out. We're very accessible there. So today we're doing
Highlight.
another highlights where we
Yeah.
get into some of our own thoughts on trends we're seeing. We try to summarize the previous episodes. So yeah, let's get right into it. This time we have episodes 19 through 23 to cover. So what are we looking at?
Well, in this group of five, we have two investors. We have Ego Death Capital and Bitcoin Opportunity Fund. And we actually, even though it would seem like we have three startups, we have five startups because one of our episodes was a recap of the winners of the pitch day from Bitcoin 2024, where we were really fortunate to be able to participate in the pitch day, interview all the contestants, and then have a deep dive with the winners on our podcast. So we've got the three winners, which are Jolts, stable coins, stable channels, and Wrigley. And then in addition to that, we also had the opportunity to talk with Alex from River, which was a fascinating conversation, and Arnab from Stalker. So we've got a wide variety of startups that we talked to this time around.
Yeah, and if you're someone just kind of here to for the quick summary and maybe want to get back into one of those episodes, I'll categorize them maybe a little differently, or I'll just kind of label them. So Ego Death, that's Bitcoin venture capital. That episode you'll learn all about that. Bitcoin Opportunity Fund, so sticking to the investor side, that's hedge fund. River with Alex, that's a brokerage and custody focused episode. Pitch day, early stage startups pitching their ideas and how they're building their businesses. And Stalker, that's an asset tokenization platform. So off the bat there, maybe take your pick on topics of interest, but yeah, no, I mean I think we have a great mix, like you mentioned, Lynn.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the investor side. Of course, I'm always partial to that, being a former VC myself. So it's like I really enjoy the conversations that we have with them. And these were two very different conversations. With Ego Death, we had previously had Jeff Booth on talking, and he is an additional partner, managing partner of Ego Death Capital, along with Andy and Nico. But where Jeff gave his beautiful philosophical views, and that's an earlier episode you can listen to. With Nico and Andy, we got into a lot more of the tactical way that the fund operates and how startups can approach them, or if they're interested in capital raise through Ego Death. And then and we got into some just great conversations. I think Nico is really wonderful about explaining how venture capital works. Andy also, just the history of venture capital and how things have changed, and how venture capital is actually evolving in the, under a Bitcoin standard, and what they look for in deals, and size checks they write. They just recently closed the first part of a new raise. They're raising $100 million for their second fund, and as they've closed on 43 and a half of that, so they've got capital available to invest in both their first fund and then their second fund, which is really geared for kind of following on or larger, later stage investments in Bitcoin companies. But it's a great episode on just, if you're not familiar with how a company would approach a VC fund, that's a great episode to listen to. What were your takeaways, Israel?
Yeah, I mean, you touched on the maybe to call it philosophical component as well, which is just kind of maybe taking a step back on where we are in venture capital. I mean, I do think Nico, I believe, was the one who kind of went through this history of how how venture capital was kind of born conceptually, right? It was for these moonshot projects, to use his precise words, I believe, from that episode, and how just as a consequence, and a concept that many people who have studied Bitcoin will be familiar with, this kind of, you know, free money, low interest rate environment, and the consequences of all of that leading to, you know, changes in the financial markets in any numerous amounts of ways, but one of those being all these malinvestments, and how that kind of shaped and changed the VC industry to something that isn't so resemblant of that, you know, kind of moonshot and support founders for their long-term vision origins. That's a great kind of.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for bringing that up. I mean, it's like, as a, you know, when I first got into venture capital, which was about 15 years ago, it was like an honorable place to be. And now I feel like VCs are just kind of thought of as villains or whatever, just, but I mean, not overall, but the industry changed dramatically in the last 15 years. And that is another consequence of the fiat system and having so much money. I think VC funds, including some of the best funds out there, just received so much in terms of, you know, $1 billion round, you know, investment funds and specialized funds with these huge multiples, that there was just a lot of money to invest. So they were kind of forced to look at different ways in order to get quicker returns back to their investors, the limited partners. And that resulted in tokenization of a lot of these, you know, especially in the quote unquote Web3 industry. And so they, you know, Nico and Andy kind of took us through that and why, as a general rule, they don't really look at investing in any companies that have tokens, because the thought process is that if you're raising a, you know, if you have a token as part of your fundraise, that you're distracted, because you've got to focus on the token price going up and manage that, and then also your business. And so what are you going to choose? You're going to choose what's giving you the liquidity from both the investor side. And it also just kind of takes away that thought that a venture investor is supposed to be in it for the long run, a partner with the startup, you know, and helping them get off the ground, find product market fit, find scalability, and grow that business. And if you don't have those incentives aligned, then it really works to the disadvantage of the startup too, especially. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have multiples more experience in the industry than I do, Lynn, but from my short experiences in the VC industry as well, I mean, there definitely was, I did get that sense of, you know, at many points, you just kind of looked at it, kind of taking a step back, and it was this, what you just mentioned, you know, this kind of growth. You're just looking at growth metrics without, you know, maybe analyzing much underneath, or as much as you maybe should, then just looking at, you know, these exit liquidity events or IPOs. And then even then you have a ton of companies out in public markets that are these so-called zombie companies. And I do remember like thinking during different times that I was working in that industry, like, well, what is this industry financing really? You know, you kind of lost a little bit of that purpose and meaning of the origins that Nico speaks to in that episode. So, I mean, tying that to Bitcoin, the kind of going back to how this is all related to the moment we're going through in Bitcoin, is now you have this new form of sound money, and all of the incentives that, and the momentum that's building is kind of bringing these VC funds back to those origins, right? Of actually investing alongside founders, being aligned with them on their long-term vision, having the patience. So it's great to have the perspective of some of these Bitcoin VCs that we've had on so far.
Yeah. And Nico talks from the very beginning of the episode about the asymmetrical opportunity. And that's based on Jeff Booth's deflationary philosophy, which is just so apparent if you think about it. It's like, if technology is improving our lives and creating magnitudes of efficiencies, then why aren't we, you know, why are prices going up? Why do we have inflation if we should be experiencing, you know, greater efficiencies and productivity? Well, it's because the money printing. So the money is being broken. And so what Nico talks about is the asymmetrical opportunity. And we hear this term over and over again with our Bitcoin VCs, is that so much money has gone into quote unquote Web3 or crypto companies, but very little funding has gone into, we heard this from Cantilever, we heard this from 1031, is going into Bitcoin focused companies. And yet Bitcoin, you know, is the standard of the new financial system, both in terms of the asset itself and its limited issuance of 21 million, but also because of the technology protocol that it's built on. So, I think that, you know, being focused on that opportunity is great to see.
Yeah, definitely. And their very clear perspective on which is, I think, spot on. The winners were yet to see, right? But that if this has a future, which we of course believe it does, the first companies to get that, to get their business model right and reach large scale, I mean, make no mistake, they're going to be some of the biggest companies out there tomorrow, right? So yeah, we definitely get quite a bit of that excitement as well from some of those VC focused episodes. So that was the Ego Death Capital investor episode. Then we had the Bitcoin Opportunity Fund, which is quite different backgrounds. I was with James and David. They are both kind of more or less hedge fund background, different flavors of traditional Wall Street, but they basically set up a Bitcoin hedge fund where they're able to take advantage of different opportunities in both public and private markets, right? So what do you think of what Bitcoin Opportunity Fund is doing?
Well, I loved this concept from the first time I met them, which it was kind of fall of 2022. And then they started in 2023 with the fundraise. But, you know, we're still in a very early stage of Bitcoin, and there's so many different sectors like mining. Like, I think Bitcoin Opportunity Fund has invested directly in mining operations. They, as you mentioned, they can invest in public or private markets, and they can invest in Bitcoin directly. So if they have available funds that they're not seeing opportunities for, they can put them in Bitcoin or move them in and out of Bitcoin. And these two investors, James Lavish has a fantastic weekly macroeconomic newsletter called the Informationist that is, I encourage people to subscribe to. David Foley has just a tremendous background in investing in underappreciated assets, along with Larry Lepard, and who is also a member of their investment team. And, you know, they just have such wisdom, such experience in being able to look at opportunities and macro trends and be able to place the bets. So it's a totally different approach than we're seeing. I mean, we've been really focused on the VCs that are investing in Bitcoin companies. And what Bitcoin Opportunity Fund is doing is, I think, really investing in Bitcoin as a concept overall. And so I think it gives a great opportunity for exposure for institutional-oriented investors to have a broad mix of, you know, they can invest in MicroStrategy stock, for example, if they wanted to, or a VC type of an investment. So it gives a lot of flexibility in the way that fund is structured. And they'll be raising another fund probably in the fall, where they're not currently open and available. But I think it's a super fun to track, and we always enjoy our conversations with them. I mean, they just have a fantastic perspective.
Yeah, they definitely also, it was clear from our conversation with them, I can't remember if it was in the episode or maybe offline, but that they've clearly seen quite a bit of appetite for what they're doing. So they're kind of being pushed towards another fund. And it's really more so like the human capital constraints for them right now, as far as being spread thin. But I mean, I mentioned that just to show that education adoption around instruments to invest in this space is going to continue growing massively. And they're both brilliant macro minds. I mean, I really enjoyed that episode as well. For anyone that likes that macro perspective and, you know, maybe more Wall Street economic side of things, and how that's tying into the opportunities in Bitcoin right now, I mean, like we were mentioning, the fact that they can jump into and out of public and private markets, that just makes them very nimble, right? So it's a very different investment approach than some of the other episodes that we've covered. I mean, and these guys that are quite familiar with, you know, private equity, with debt instruments, all types of securities, they have very, very deep Wall Street roots and backgrounds, right? So they're pretty sophisticated investors, and it's really interesting to see them, you know, kind of go after this nascent industry, and they do a great job of explaining the why and how they're doing it in this episode. So great material in the Bitcoin Opportunity Fund conversation.
And maybe that's a good segue into our you know, one of our startups, I guess we call this, is that we interviewed, and that's Stocker, which is our most recent episode, just since we're kind of talking about capital markets and big picture and the Bitcoin space. You know, that I was just blown away by that conversation with Arnab, but you know, he's essentially, and Stocker is essentially remaking or reimagining capital markets on the Bitcoin protocol. And, you know, we hear a lot about this because we hear smart contracts and we hear about, you know, tokenized securities. But in our experience, and we've been approached by a lot of companies wanting to talk about their ability, they've been done on different blockchains, Tron, Ethereum, things like this, and not on Bitcoin. And there's generally a tokenization element to their own offering. And that's not the case with Stocker. So I just so appreciated his very thoughtful approach to the capital market space in general. So in other words, if we've been able to digitalize information, entertainment, news, pretty much everything, except for, you know, we still have capital markets that, you know, lock up on Friday at 5 New York time and don't open again until Monday at 9. And why is that? And, you know, and I mean, you know, it's just the whole traditional banking industry and capital markets industry is just kind of stuck in the past. And so he's been really looking at how to provide greater liquidity, greater global trading opportunities in a regulated environment, also help companies and new assets tokenize and be able to trade. So, I mean, just so many topics that we touched on in that episode were fascinating to me, like returning securities to a bearer instrument, having people being able to self-custody their own assets, their own securities, and be able to borrow or lend or transfer, whatever, you know, which we've lost. I mean, as securities markets has evolved, that used to be the standard. People would get issued a stock certificate and you'd put it in your safe deposit box. And now everything is centralized and held at banks, and it's just an asset on a ledger. So I love that idea of returning self-sovereignty to the capital markets, and in addition to liquidity and more global opportunities.
And you touch on a good point, Lynn, which is this concept of, you know, kind of the bearer instrument returning to a sovereign kind of state for the securities markets. And I think it's particularly interesting because we've had this concept floating around of asset tokenization for many years now already, right? With this whole, you know, blockchain boom and all the hype going around the space. But so far, all we've seen around that is asset tokenization using other quote unquote blockchains / cryptos and crypto protocols. Basically, the Ethereum down, right? And the problem there is you're not, I mean, to what you just mentioned, securities markets have always been kind of, they've always been at the mercy of this centralization and counterparty problem, right? And you don't really solve that with these other centralized blockchains. I mean, you're it's a different flavor, you know, it's a different type of technology, which, you know, maybe it moves nicely, it's faster, and it has these other, you know, nice functions, let's just say, but you never really got past, right, that centralization and counterparty problem, right? I mean, we never actually had a paradigm shift until this starts to be built on the Bitcoin protocol, which of course gets rid of that centralization and counterparty. So it's, I mean, it's fascinating because, yeah, you do start to see the early signs of this concept of asset tokenization being implemented in a way that truly is, you know, bare instrument final settlement without this centralization. And
something that you picked up on the episode too that Arnaud mentioned is this direct relationship between the issuer of the security and the owner. So now there's been a middleman and you don't have that relationship, but now through this tokenized platform, you do. So that's a fantastic opportunity. Like one of the examples is that I think has been super successful, and I'd encourage people to take a look at, is the Blockstream mining note. And so the BMN, and they issued a 3-year note originally that recently matured in the past couple months, and at a super rate of return, like 30% a year. Am I correct on that?
I think it was 30% total, but with Bitcoin as the cost basis. So it was, 30% return on top of your BTC in BTC. So it was all Bitcoin denominated, which is quite incredible. I mean,
And now they're issuing a 4-year note, but they, even if you liquidated out of 3, you have the opportunity to get into the 4-year note, the new issue, the second issuing of that, because Blockstream has a relationship with you. And so they know who bought it. It's not, it's not an anonymous exchange that people are trading through. So, and Adam Back, structured that note. And of course, he's one of the only person named specifically in the Bitcoin white paper, and, has been involved in Bitcoin for so many years and in so many ways that it's just wonderful to see, him visualizing. And it's basically tokenizing hash rate. So it's a way for people to get involved with mining. I mean, that's the other part of it, is aside from just the financials and how successful this product has been, it's like to look at the fact that you're tokenizing hash rate, an asset that, it would be very difficult to monetize or to share in a regular securities market. But the tokenization of it and the way they've structured this just allows more people to participate in mining without the capital expenditure and the knowledge of how to be a miner.
Yeah, and I wanted to maybe just quickly touch on, kind of land one of the points you mentioned, Lynn, which is the direct relationship. So let's take this BMN example you just mentioned, right? So you have this example of the issuing company, which was Blockstream, issuing this node for hash rate, this BMN instrument, and it was issued directly to, let's say it's me, an investor. You have absolutely no, like little to no intermediation there. And that was a like regulated security that was issued, and I am the bearer of, and they have this direct relationship, which again, you touched on. And I read that for BMN 2, they also have lots of participation from the BMN 1 investors that are kind of rolling that over into the BMN 2 offering, because of course they believers in what that offers, right? From the investor perspective. But I mean, it's something for people that's worth, like, for people to get their head around. It's because that's pretty powerful, like, paradigm shift that was just realized. I mean, it's starting with Bitcoin derivatives and Bitcoin structured products, and Arnaud touches on that. But I mean, what we're talking about is something that just, I mean, to be quite clear, just simply was not possible years ago.
Yeah.
It didn't exist.
If you are involved in the capital markets, if you're curious about it, it's like, give that episode a listen. There's so much in there that just gets you thinking about what is possible in the future. With the Bitcoin blockchain as a time chain, is what I like to call it, and protocol as a foundation for remaking capital markets. I was fascinated by that episode and all that it's given me to think about.
Yeah, definitely worth a listen, and Stalker is definitely worth keeping an eye on. So from there, we also had, let's see, we can maybe cover the pitch day winners episode. That one was a different type of episode. So specifically, Bitcoin Conference 2024 in Nashville in, was it late July this year?
Yeah, right. Okay, in July.
And they had what they called, you know, an industry day before the main events of the conference, and where there was a already pre-vetted list of startups that pitched, right? And so we featured the three winners of the three tracks, which were Jolts from the scaling track, Stable Channels from the open source track, and Wrigley from the mining track. So that, I mean, it was compressed basically 20 minutes, 20 minutes, 1 hour episode. What were your thoughts, Lynn? I mean, we're three very different companies, but great, great projects that they're working on.
Well, it shows that we can have an interview with someone in 20 minutes, but I think it also shows that we can't get into some of the nuances and the exciting parts of it in 20 minutes. So, I mean, I'll say, first of all, I'd love to have all three of those companies and founders back on again for a deeper dive when they're ready. I mean, these were all very early stage companies, but I think certainly ones to watch. And, you know, I've known the Jolts team for about a year now, and that conversation is great because it shows that, you know, a founder listening to their audience and how to expand their product once they kind of, you know, reached a limit or gotten feedback. I mean, it was Jolts started as a rewards card for Bitcoin, but not necessarily a direct to consumer, but for businesses to offer rewards to employees, to users, and things like this. And it's just, we're not at the adoption level yet. And so Jolts is kind of transitioning to a different platform. But I think that their growth is, I mean, they're really in some great tech with some stable coin and scaling opportunities that they're rolling out in their product. And it was an interesting conversation to see how a startup evolves and really finds their market and goes forward with it. What about you, Israel? What'd you take from Jolts?
Yeah, I mean, not much to add, just recommend listening for anyone interested in how Bitcoin scaling through the Lightning Network. And Ian, I mean, he's a great example of that type of founder that you mentioned, that just kind of, you know, he had plenty of experience before, kind of found a problem that needed solving, and he's going after it. I mean, they're building a great team and product and technology. And they're very focused right now. New release from the Lightning stack of allowing what's called Taproot assets, which basically just means stable coins, which exist using other blockchains currently. That's kind of where they live, let's say. And it seems to be the case that they're going to soon be able to start to move onto the Bitcoin blockchain, right? So Ian's very focused on that side of the smart contract side that Lightning is enabling. Great episode with Jolts. I don't want to drag us on too much here for the sake of time, but very worth a listen. Stable Channels, very different concept and project. That's open source project, allowing people to basically maintain a dollar denominated stable value for their Bitcoin. And that is all done through Lightning channels as well. So we're kind of going back to this Lightning theme, right? Which we kind of mentioned in the episode, to me, that sounded like perpetual futures in a way, but using Bitcoin and Lightning efficiencies and technology, essentially. There's a lot more to it than that, but
yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I know that's maybe a little more technical of a founder, but Tony, you know, worked or was one of the leads at the JP Morgan Chase digital asset team in their trading department. And so he really knows his stuff and, you know, left that to start his own company. And, you know, here we follow this trend of remaking capital markets. So I think what he's doing is helping create, a product or service in an open source manner that will, you know, help facilitate some of this trading for people who need stability in assets but want Bitcoin and seeing the progression of the Lightning channels. So I really applaud Bitcoin 2024 for having an open source track, because Bitcoin is open source. And so, you know, it's the foundation of it. And so I think by acknowledging the founders that are building in an open source way, it's a great testament to see them getting the recognition and seeing how open source can also be profitable. So, but yeah, it's a great listen, and kind of extends our conversation too about, you know, new tools or new opportunities for capital markets.
Yeah. And then the third startup winner from that pitch day was Wrigley from the mining and energy side. So they're basically building a hash rate marketplace, is how they describe it and what it essentially is. I mean, that is what they offer. They have, you know, there's some nuances to it as far as the mechanisms on how that works. I recommend you give that a listen. They have a kind of buy on demand, what they call spot hash rate offering, or they have an auction format. And again, that's well covered in the episode. They go through a deep explanation of why and how. But I mean, I think to me, the important point they're addressing, and it, you know, it is very interesting to see, is that they're basically able to take existing mining operations, and as a buyer of that hash rate, I can point it to whichever pool I want. And again, this gets into some nuances of how mining works in the Bitcoin network. But the importance, I think the big takeaway for me is that you're allowing users to have more access into the mining industry and the mining of Bitcoin itself. And if I want to point it to a different pool, there will be other content that will cover the importance of that. But it is an important topic, the decentralization of Bitcoin pools as well. I'm able to do that. I'm able to choose who is actually creating the templates for the blocks that are being mined from that hash rate, right?
Yeah, they get into in the episode a great explanation of how it works and what the different options are. And basically, it's become more expensive and more complex to be involved in mining as Bitcoin has grown and as the price increases and as the amount of mined Bitcoin each block decreases. And Nico and Evan really wanted to solve this problem of the increasing centralization of mining and template block templates and mining. And so this is just a beautiful way for anyone curious about mining. They even have a free option, or like a sample, like you can go on their website and test it out. But you know, for small amounts of sats, but it's a way for anyone who wants to get involved with mining and is curious about it. So I think it's a great product, and I think it has a lot of potential, and I think it's a really important participant in the marketplace. And this kind of goes back to Stalker and the Blockstream mining node. So we're seeing these different ways for people to participate in Bitcoin mining. And the whole idea behind it is that Bitcoin mining should be more profitable than buying Bitcoin itself, or you get the benefit of freshly mined Bitcoin that hasn't been transacted in. So you can move that right to your wallet. So for those two reasons, you know, people want to look at mining, and these are two different examples that you can participate in mining without having to set up your own equipment. So, you know, it's kind of a connection line between the two that we're drawing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would just kind of close it off there, that they're opening the doors for individuals to get more involved in mining precisely for some of those reasons, right? Maybe it can be more profitable at times than just holding Bitcoin. Maybe I want the freshly minted Bitcoin, and it's been an industry that's kind of hard to participate in. You know, maybe I use one of those hosting services, but you know, if I don't want to go that route, there's definitely some creativity and innovation going on around how you can participate in mining. So that's an episode to listen to if you're interested in that. The final one, River, that was in the recent episodes, one of the more I think prominent and mature startups in the space. I mean, I greatly admire what Alex and the River team are doing as far as tackling the basics of how people use Bitcoin, which is buying, selling, holding I mean, they've been tackling that for a few years, but they're doing it in a very serious, well thought out, and I would almost say pleasant way. I mean, Alex is a very product minded individual, and that reflects in everything they do. I mean, they have very high security standards. They do things, I would say, at an institutional grade. The product focus is also just very transparent in their service as well. I mean, it's the user experience is very fluid.
I think this is going to end up being one of my very favorite episodes. I really enjoyed the conversation. And, you know, beyond the conversation about what River does, how it got started, the services and its growth path, I loved listening to Alex talk about how he thought about founding the company. It was very strategic and building a network, building his own reputation, really learning the space before he started River and his path. And he gives some, I think, fantastic advice for any startup founder to listen to, no matter what the space, you know, what your industry is or what your product is, by focusing on simplicity, keeping your team lean but flexible, focus, you know, not getting distracted, which is very, very hard to do. I think, you know, there's so many different opportunities and investing your resources in what he calls the iceberg, you know, the beneath the surface part of the iceberg. So the foundational technology. And I think it just goes to show he's both the CEO and the CTO, which I think is daunting. But the way he explains it, especially in a technical, you know, a company like River, it's like it's really important that the strategy has to be tied to the technology. And so, you know, when he talks about the automation process is really, you know, freeing up the employees to be able to focus on customer service and strategic thinking and business development. It's like, you know, it does make sense that the CEO is the CTO and how he melds all that together. But I just found I almost felt like it was a Steve Jobs type of person, the approach to how he thinks about his company. So it was really wonderful to listen to.
Yeah, I highly recommend giving that one a listen. I mean, even to your point, the founder story as well. I mean, Alex kind of speaks to this, how when he saw Coinbase start to get distracted with all these other tokens and coins, that's when he saw his business, like the opportunity to become, you know, kind of what he describes as a Bitcoin bank. That opportunity opened up for him, right? And he'd been preparing himself kind of for that moment for a few years before that. So the founder story is great. It's fascinating. And then the product itself is well covered in that episode, how they built the brokerage that they have built so far at River, their ambitions for going forward. I mean, they're very laser focused on just doing what the task at hand at right now, doing it just very well and thought out. So give that one a listen. It's very worth, you know, kind of listening to Alex's perspective on these things. And to me, I would just say another final note or takeaway from that episode is what they're doing on the custody side, which I think is super important because I believe it's still one of like the big red flags or risks in the Bitcoin industry. I mean, you basically have Coinbase custody dominating. I'm not sure what the percentage is, but a very high percentage of the custody side for a lot of Bitcoin individuals and institutions. And I don't want to put words in Alex's mouth, but he does speak to it a little bit that they're aiming to become a very dominant player in the custody side of things. So to me, that's just a very healthy and welcoming sign of the maturity of the industry. And the River team is you know, top notch in what they're doing.
Yeah, it's needed. I think early adoption is in Bitcoin was by individuals, by, you know, more technical individuals who understood how to self-custody. But as the adoption grows, many people are not comfortable with holding their own Bitcoin, and institutions can't in many cases self-custody, or it's very complicated for them. you know, who holds the keys in an institution or a company. So custody services are I think, one of the huge opportunities in building with Bitcoin. And so, you know, it's like these are part of the, you know, the path of Bitcoin depends on better user experiences, better custody solutions, better usability. So yeah, it's important what he's building.
So that wraps up, I guess, the highlights of what we covered, which again, it's a bit tough to really get into all of it, especially this one that we had the pitch day covering three startups in one. But yeah, that's the summary of what we had in the most recent set of content. I mean, it goes to show you the breadth of Bitcoin technology. I mean, very different aspects of the network and of the industry that these founders and or investors are focusing on, right? So it just kind of goes to show how much is still yet to be seen with the growth of this industry. As far as commonalities or trends, to maybe begin to wrap up the episode, layer two was definitely in this set of content, of, you know, very present theme. I mean, specifically you had, Jolts, Stable Channels, and Stalker doing different things with layer two solutions to Bitcoin. So you're starting to see Bitcoin mature from that, you know, new form of money and what the base layer is as a protocol to anchoring on top of that security and soundness, different technology solutions that are able to scale Bitcoin in other ways in a very secure manner. So layer two was definitely present, and I think will continue to be present. Certainly, what other themes, or maybe going off of that theme, and anything to add?
You've expressed that perfectly. I think that was a good takeaway from this group. The other takeaway that I had was just this theme of tokenization. So that topic came up in the conversation with Ego Death, just talking about their philosophy of tokens. It came up with in Alex's conversation too, just talking about, you know, his investor group and why they, you know, would not push him to do a token. And it comes up with Stalker. And, you know, it's very unusual in that if he's a platform that's helping companies tokenize assets, why didn't he choose not to tokenize? And kind of a common theme is it's a distraction, because if you have a token for your company, you need to manage that token. You need to push up the price, market it, and it becomes its own business. And so it takes away from your foundational business. Not getting distracted was another common theme. And I think that goes hand in hand with the tokenization. But, you know, we are seeing these founders reject that early liquidity and aim for more solid business growth, revenue growth, true profitability, and building a long-term, you know, solid business instead of the quick hit that I think is common in early stage tech, especially in the Web3 space. So when I re-listen to the episodes, which I do every time right before we do the highlights, you know, there were so many fascinating takeaways about why tokenization is not an option for a company really building solidly with Bitcoin.
You stated it perfectly, Lynn. I won't add too much to that. But at the same time, I don't want to undermine it. I mean, that is foundational, right, to what we're seeing in the startup space with Bitcoin. It's founders sticking to their principles. To your point, I'm not going to tokenize something I don't need to tokenize because it's a distraction. It steers me away from what I'm actually building, which is a solid business on top of a solid foundation. And I'm just going to be laser focused on that. So it's definitely, I think, a commonality with even beyond just these five episodes. What everyone we've spoken to on the founder and startup side to date, right? So, maybe that's, you know, a great place to stop. Lots covered. Anything to add?
No, that's these conversations just really continue to inspire me. because of that, just the quality of the founders that were in the values and how closely they're aligned with the values of Bitcoin and as a sound financial foundation. So, and the investors as well. I mean, everyone just, you know, it's a joy to talk to these people. And so we hope you enjoy the conversations as much as we enjoy having them.